Hello, you are listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves.
You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio hosts.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This is all my half East Asian BFFs. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend checking out the other episodes too, but you can also just dive in here with us. On this episode, Jade, Reese, Sumiko, and Daniela talk about the stereotype of being high-achieving Asians.
So, welcome to this Half East Asian BFF banter sesh. I was going to say roundtable, but that's like way too serious. So welcome everyone. I'm Daniela. I'm half Danish, half Chinese, and I am producer at Third, among other things. Welcome. Hello, Reese. Would you like to tell our audience who you are and what you do and your heritage, please?
Hello, my name is Reese Soitongsuk. I can give you my whole name, actually.
Love
Reese
it.
Arthur Virasak Soitongsuk. Lots of names.
We might need that again. That was like epic.
Reese Arthur Virasak Soitongsuk. Virasak is like an old Thai name. Really old for old people. And Arthur is my British grandfather's name. Yeah. What else did you ask me to tell you?
Your heritage, please.
Half Thai, half English. And lived in England my whole life.
Jade, welcome. Tell our audience who you are, please.
I'm Jade. My full name is Jade Fung Ellens, and I'm half Chinese and half English.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in England, right near Reese, apparently. We never met until now.
you are both from the same area in London?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small world. And Sumiko?
Hi, I'm Sumiko May. I am from Scotland. I am half British, half Japanese. And I grew up and live in Scotland, but I currently now live in London. I work for the International Federation of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and I work looking at national society disaster management capacity strengthening. Might be a completely foreign language for a lot of people out there, but it basically means making a national Red Cross organizations strong so when an emergency hits, they can respond quickly and effectively.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Whoa. When you hear it like that, it sounds more amazing.
It sounds like Star Wars to me.
Like a foreign language.
It sounds like you should be sitting on like a hover seat.
Yeah, and it's really serious.
And
sounding.
Like, yeah.
I can bring it down.
Yeah, the seriousness. We can't cope with that. None of us can cope with that.
I'm a tree manager. A tree officer is the legit term for the area that we grew up in, actually. The whole of Redbridge.
Really?
Yeah. So like I manage publicly owned trees and deal with the replacement of them and the pruning of them and the health and safety and everything you can possibly imagine that is involved in the management of trees, basically.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's nice, actually. It's really
That's
nice.
A really
I spend
good
a lot
job.
Of time outdoors and walking around. It's good.
Yeah, you all look really nice and tanned.
You do.
I
actually,
feel
yeah,
like
you
I should have put more bronzer on.
That's equally fantastical, Reese, dealing with trees
kind,
and stuff.
Kind
this
of.
Also doesn't really sound real.
No, yeah.
But you know when you say tree manager, I imagine you're like the imps from yeah. The Hobbit in Lord of the Rings. I imagine yeah. You're like managing these giant imps wandering around the forest.
It's kind of the case, kind of.
What would you say is the favourite part of your job, Reese?
Probably just the general sense of fulfillment from knowing that it's a job that gives back to the world we live in a bit and improves like our community and our society. And without the trees, our life is going to be pretty miserable. So I like the sense that I'm doing something good, basically.
I didn't like the way you said our lives are going to be bad. Like this is going to happen.
It's getting worse and worse all the time. It's genuinely concerning, really. I was just in Italy in a park where like the whole park, for some reason, one park in particular had like really bad drought and it lost like maybe 60% of the trees in the park in the past 2 years. And it looked so depressing, dead grass everywhere. Something just weird going on.
But you are going to save us from that, right?
I'm going to try. If I get enough public funding, that's what we need. Better governments with more money, because we're not actually getting enough money to replant and grow the green stock. There's not enough money going in. We're basically just maintaining right now. Losing a bit, actually, is the truth.
I planted a magnolia last week.
Nice. That's good. Yeah.
You told me they get really massively, yeah, intrusively big.
In the front, was that?
No, in the back.
Nice. No, that's good. Yeah.
High achieving Asian over here. Started, like, well, I did this.
It comes after a conversation we had where Reese's like, they just get too big. And I'm like, I planted
it. I'll help you manage it.
But Reese, what can the public do to help you help our immediate environment?
More awareness and more, like, just talk about it more. The fact that, the thing is, nobody really knows that my job even exists in the first place and never thinks about the fact that there are, every green space in the whole of the country has someone managing it. And we need more people to shout about, like, clean air and the climate crisis and this kind of thing, so that there's more funding being put into planting more trees and planting more green and just generally thinking about it more. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculously enough, it's still not in the forefront of everyone's mind, which it really should be at this point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just
learn more about it and talk more about it.
Yeah, exactly. And petition more and actually fight for it.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, what's the word? Abstract. It's such an abstract concept. It's just there all the time. You don't really think about it. Mm-hmm. It's only when you start doing it for a living that you actually, like, realize how much goes into all of it. There's so much about just planting new stuff and then maintaining it and the way you have to fund it all. And it is actually really quite complicated. So,
I'm looking forward to, looking more into that. Okay, Jade, what do you do?
I'm a musician. That's, I don't know what else. Everyone had these really, like, cool, like, complicated jobs. But so I sing and I play guitar and I play bass. And I also play ukulele, but mainly because I teach it. You know, I sort of, like, picked that up. I think people call it, like, a portfolio career. Is that what it's called?
That sounds good. I'm going to call myself that.
Yeah. That's what my friend said. I was like, I do all these different things and I get stressed. It's like, it's called a portfolio career. So I do a mixture of sort of teaching singing and guitar and ukulele and then performing. I'm in sort of like a bunch of bands and I write my own music, really.
That is very cool and complicated.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's probably the coolest in many ways.
I like that portfolio thing. Because how do you define what you do in, like, one
thing? I know.
Because you do so many things.
Portfolio, that's what my friend said. And I was like, I'm going to take that. And this was, like, 4 years ago. So that's what I used to describe myself now.
Yeah, I'm going to start using that as well.
Yeah.
Because when people ask you, you're just like, where do I start? And you can just be like, well, I have a portfolio career. And then, like, based on their reaction to that, you can go more into it or just be like, bye.
Yeah, exactly.
And Reese, you are also very musical. You have a record label, right? And you make music.
I make music, do music, portfolio musician.
Of course you are. Oh my goodness.
DJ a bit and do other stuff. Wow. And mainly just love music more than anything.
That's so cool. And
so I kind of fell into everything else. But it's very much like a small hobby, not something that I would say is my, I don't know, not my career, obviously.
I wouldn't say, call it a small hobby.
I was going to say it's not my be all and end all, but actually it's probably my be all and end all, to be honest. But,
that's so cool.
Yeah.
So can we just clarify that we are both half East Asian. We both grew up in Woodford Green and we both are in music and we have never met before today.
That's crazy.
That is weird, isn't it? Oh my God, it's destiny. I don't believe in it, but now I do.
Yeah, it does feel like it. But...
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
It's pretty weird.
Well, seeing as we've got so many musicians here, I'm a musician as well. I have a fun question, which is, like, just to allow our audience to know us a bit better. Jade, do you have a song that you've just, like, played a million times over? Like, your one track you'll take to the end of the earth?
Yes.
Great. Good answer.
It's Gimme, Gimme, Gimme a Man After Midnight by ABBA. Perfect. ABBA, one of my favourite bands, and I went and saw ABBA Voyage a few weeks ago. You've seen them?
Yeah.
Who's your favourite character? I mean...
Character, love
sorry.
It.
Sorry. Who's your favourite band member?
I have to say the blonde woman. Is that a really obvious choice?
Yes, but it's okay. Like, I've met one person...
I feel like I've exposed myself there.
No, she's... But I got into ABBA when I was like six, and then I've loved them ever since, and I always loved Agnetha ever since. But I met one person who did prefer Frida. So, you know.
One, just one.
Just one person.
I know, Papa. But I researched that Frida's actually now a princess. So I think she's just winning it.
Wow, really?
She married a prince.
Wow, that is incredible. After being in ABBA.
I haven't got that wrong.
That's impressive.
I know.
So, landing on her feet.
We don't need to feel too sorry for her. It's okay.
Yeah, for being she's unpopular.
Yeah.
She's popular among some people.
How about you, Reese?
I can't answer that question, I'm afraid.
Oh, stop it. Everybody can.
I was just trying
you
to rack
to.
My brain. I'm so much...
I spent half an hour preparing for this question, okay?
I'm so much someone that has a moment, like a song of the moment, rather than an overall song that I listen to.
No, but you have to bring one track to
one
you.
One track. Can you go to can you go
a
to Sumiko?
Desert island.
I have to think about it for a little while.
Okay.
It's really difficult.
I'm going to tell you mine first.
Yep.
The one track would be Chet Baker, My Funny Valentine. I listen to that track constantly throughout the years. Every time I listen to it, I get something new out of it.
I hear
different notes. I hear different nuances that he uses with his voice. Can't get enough of this track.
That's a really good one.
It's a good choice. It's a beautiful song.
Something I definitely over-listen to now is Bon Jovi. And I still rate them, but I went to a friend's 40th birthday where it was a Bon Jovi tribute band. Apparently the best Bon Jovi tribute band, according to Bon Jovi himself. And I was like, I don't know enough Bon Jovi to make this fun. So I binged listening to Bon Jovi for like the run-up, like a month maybe, the run-up. And then, so my go-to music now is like when I'm just drunk and dancing around the kitchen myself, is probably Bon Jovi.
They are a good party band, aren't they? This is a really nerdy question. Did the cover band, did they sing all the songs in the original key, do you think? Did they sound extremely high?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's amazing. I don't even do that. When I have to do like Living on a Prayer, I'm like, no, not that key change.
Okay, Reese, are you ready?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
I feel like I've coerced you into this situation.
I've been asked this question so many times in my life, I've never been able to answer it because it's just always a different... I just always have a different answer.
Yeah.
But if I had to say something right at this moment in time, I would say Blessed Relief by Frank Zappa because it's a really nice song. And I really like the album. There aren't many things that I go back and listen to. I listen to new stuff all the time. There's a few bands that I always go back to. I was going to say something by Nirvana, but I couldn't think of a single song that I still enjoy because I've been listening to Nirvana since I was like 9 years old. So I thought I'd go for this song. It's a beautiful song if you've never heard it.
I haven't heard it.
It's really, really nice. It's the album's great, but that song is particularly beautiful. I'd recommend it.
Cool.
We're learning so much already, like how to get more trees into our environment, new albums, key changes in Bon Jovi. This is great. So what are we here to do? Harfi's Asian BFF. So we were together, Sumiko, Reese, Zach, me, at a dinner party. And then people, like various people left the room. And we were the only people left in the room. And we were like, this is so weird. Like four people who are all half East Asian, half white in a room together. Never happened in my life. I was just like, my siblings from like the cosmic universe, this is amazing. And that was like a wonderful moment. So this is why like I wanted to have another opportunity to talk. And it's like really nice to meet you, Jade. I feel like you're part of the BFF family.
I am so excited. Yeah. I don't know if you can tell, but I've never been in a room with so many half East Asians in my life. It's like the same thing, right? But it's happening to me now. So I'm just, I like inside my heart.
Is it all the feels?
I'm so happy.
I love that. One of the things that I found also that like, I noticed you did that, Jade, like earlier, talking about like what Asians do. And I find that we talk about being Asian so much when we're together. And it's almost like, because there's no other opportunity to really do it, because it's like quite a random thing to do. Mm. And if you were fully, fully Asian, you wouldn't talk about that, because it'd be like, like, you know, that fish thing, like the old fish says to the young fish, like, how's the water? And the little fish are like, what's water? It would be like that for them.
Yeah.
Whereas like for us, when we're together, we're like, oh yeah, this Asian thing, like, oh, Asian, like, oh, Asians do this. And it's just like quote marks, I'm using like quote marks, like real Asians, if they were listening on that, they'd probably be like, these people are crazy.
Like when we mocked you for running out of rice. Wouldn't happen to a real Asian. Actually, half Asian.
It just happened to me.
It
just happened to me as well.
You mocked yourself.
Yeah, I know. I was really, I didn't think about that actually. Yeah, me and Zach also ran out of rice. To be fair, we had basmati rice, but we ran out of jasmine rice.
I love it. Like, we ran out of rice, but we had jasmine rice.
You know, we didn't have the main rice. We had backup rice. It's not the same though. It's not the same.
See, if I run out of rice, it means maybe I've got basmati, maybe I've got jasmine, but I don't have sushi rice.
There you go.
To be fair, when I said I didn't have rice in the house, I had sticky purple rice. So I did have rice.
What do you make the sticky purple rice?
I do one part purple sticky rice and two part white rice. Uh-huh. And then I do it together and it's all purple, and I feel like it's really, really healthy without being like too intense.
That sounds amazing. I've never had that tasty in my life.
Yeah, do you ever have this thing in a bamboo cane with like lots of sweet stuff in it? Do you have that in China? You ever seen that before? That's the only place I've ever seen purple.
Or in a pineapple.
Oh, wow.
So tasty.
That sounds good.
You steam the rice in the pineapple with pineapple pieces, sticky rice. This is like a very south China thing.
I've never had this.
So good. You can do that at home. You can do it.
Is it savory or sweet?
It's sweetish.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Taiwan's like.
But you can also put ham in it.
No, don't get onto your Hawaiian. No. Don't try and justify your Hawaiian.
Maybe not.
Are you sure about that?
Don't try and justify your Hawaiian pizza.
Are you sure about that?
No.
Maybe it's just my own fantasy.
That sounds amazing. Do you know what? Do you know what I do have? Do you remember from when I was little, when my auntie and uncles used to come and stay? You know the yu chao, the fried dough sticks? I might be saying it wrong. I'm doing it with my hand. Sorry, yeah. But I'm trying to show you.
That's my favourite thing, yu chao, yeah.
Yu chao, right? Yeah, delicious. Yeah. And they used to wrap it in sticky rice with brown sugar.
Whoa, never had that.
It was amazing.
Wow, around the donut itself.
Yeah, around the long donut. And they would wrap it and they would eat it as a snack. Because they make the yu chao sweet then. You know, rather than savoury in a soup or something.
That sounds great.
It was amazing.
I didn't know that they were eating savoury until recently, actually. Since I met you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either, really.
The only time
but you know
see
you can get them from the shop. You can get them frozen.
Yeah.
And then
they're really good.
Oh, that's like such a nice treat.
You know, we've told you before, right? We eat them for breakfast.
Yeah.
With condensed
milk.
Yeah,
breakfast.
So only sweet.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
In Thailand,
yeah. It's my favourite breakfast.
That sounds amazing.
It was so good.
I used to have like hot milk with sugar, and then I cut it into little pieces and like put it in there and then eat it with a spoon.
Oh,
it
sounds
nice.
So good.
It's so fucking good.
I guess that's a kind of a condensed milky vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor person with condensed milk.
Pardon? I'm swimming in the soup of this breakfast. I'm like zoned out. Okay, cool. So now that we know who everyone is and what we're here to do, I think the thing that we would like to talk about today, right now, is this concept of like the high achieving Asian, the stereotype. Has it been applied to you? Do you feel like you are a high achieving Asian? How do you deal with this? How much do you talk about this in therapy? Everything is open, okay? So, maybe I'll start just to say that, like, I think definitely other people said that to me first. Maybe one of you guys. I don't know. I'm trying to think what was the first time I heard this phrase. But
Probably Zach.
But yeah, I feel like it's a matter of perspective. And I think for Asian culture, it's just like the baseline that's expected. You're supposed to like learn everything. Like this is this concept of like the four arts, which is like qin, qi, shu, hua, which is like qin is music, like this old instrument. Qi is go. So that like, I guess it kind of stands in for like logic and maths to a degree. Shu is calligraphy, and that also like encapsulates poetry. And then Hua is to paint. So that's like arts, right? And it's like, that is the standard, like as a sort of well-educated scholarly person, this is like ancient times, but I think it very much comes through to the present. So like as a educated scholarly person, you are expected to have the fundamentals in all four arts. And so like, I think this concept of like a high achieving Asian is very much like a non-Asian perspective, because I feel like where people have talked about like, oh, being a high achieving Asian, I'm just like, no, I'm just learning all the things and doing all the things because this is what's expected of me. Like not in a bad way, just like, I'm just learning the skills and I enjoy the process of doing that. Obviously there is a flip side where that can like become pressure and yeah, I mean, there's flip side, right? But yeah, that's kind of like how I think about this concept, that like, who comes up with this phrase? Like, because people in Asia don't talk about high achieving Asians, right? But they talk about pressure.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think from my personal perspective and with my family, everyone is just expected to do well, you know, and everyone is doing well, I guess. I personally think I am regarded the least successful. I feel like a lot of my cousins have really, really good jobs. And I'm also an only child. So I feel I had all the eggs in the basket. I'm really bad at sayings, but you know what I mean. Like, so my parents, it was like I was their one shot to be good at things and successful. And I think they worked really hard to give me a really nice life, really good education. I'm so grateful. But I think, you know, certain things I just wasn't good at. Like, I'm not good at maths. And I feel, I don't know if you get this, but people always assume that because I'm half Chinese, like, I'm going to be really good at maths. And I'm really bad. So, so bad. But a lot of my family...
Are you sure you're half Asian?
I know.
No, I am too.
Don't worry.
What?
I'm not good at maths at all.
Right?
Not even remotely.
But the thing is, I did like my grade one piano when I was 6 years old. Do you know what I mean? So I think it just wasn't in the cards for me to be extremely academic. But I'd say a lot of my family are academic, and a lot of them were musical and arty. But I think that was, like you said, just the expectation. It was never like considered, like if I didn't do well in my exams or something like that, it was like you failed. It wasn't ever like, oh, don't worry, just try better next time. It was like, you are expected to do well in most things that you do. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Sometimes I probably would get stressed because I just wasn't very academic, and nothing I did would probably make me as academic as maybe some other people. But yeah, and I think I totally agree with what you said. I think none of my family expect anything less. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I don't know. What do you think?
First of all, do you think it's something that like transcends each nation, in every single East Asian country? Is like in Japan, is that so big a thing? Because I know like Indian culture is pretty good academic education, become a doctor, become an engineer, that kind of thing. But I'm not sure if it would go to like Vietnam, Myanmar, all these other places. So actually my intro was not correct. I said two things that aren't really true. I lived in Thailand for a brief period of my life, and also I'm Thai Chinese, which means my grandparents are actually Chinese. And I think the high achieving Asian thing is more of a Chinese thing than it is a Thai thing. So I have a bit of a weird mixture of things where my dad is kind of more Thai than he is Chinese. But I've learned in my later life, actually, a lot of the culture of my family that I've always considered to be Thai is actually stems from old school Chinese culture. I read a book called Letters from Thailand, and it's about a Chinese immigrant who moved to Bangkok at a similar time to when my grandparents did. And I learned so much about like how my family works and the way my dad treats us as children. And a lot of it does stem from this old Chinese culture. But that being said, I have never experienced the pressure of being a high achieving Asian. Not at all. Zach, he's had the exact opposite experience, which is quite strange, really. if I told you my side, you'd think that you'd probably assume they'd be the same for me and my brothers, because I'm not particularly academic either. And my parents never really pushed me to do anything. They just kind of let me do whatever I want, because I never really, I wasn't bad in school, but I never like was excelling to the point where there was like, you know, something huge on the horizon. So they just kind of let me do whatever I wanted always. But Zach was very intelligent very early on, and he got a lot of pressure from my parents to do really well at everything.
Yeah. Like, but that's probably because Zach's got, so you've got a sibling.
Yeah.
See, but I think...
Two siblings.
Yeah. So they've got like a few baskets.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Your point though about whether it's like a pan-Asian thing is like really... It's like a really pertinent thing to bring out, because I think that's why I also like always refer to this group as like the half East Asian BFFs, which is also still a very fucking big region. But yeah, it's the dangers of stereotyping, of course. It's like you just eclipse so much nuance. Sumiko, in Japan, do you think there's like a similar thing, or is it very different?
I think it's quite different, I think. But I think my mom's not very traditional Japanese. She's from a very small island off Tokyo Bay. It's a very rural island, tropical island, and it's very different from mainland island, to the extent where, like, even my family going to Tokyo, they've struggled to understand the dialect. It's so strong. In Osaka, they understand it, but in Tokyo, they don't. So it's quite a very unique place. And my mom was a bit of a free spirit, a bit of a hippie, so she never had that sort of pressure herself. And she was the youngest child, so she never got that pressure from her family. So I think that came down a little bit to us. We never had that much pressure from that side of my family. But what I would say, I think it wasn't pressure so much, but the drive to be, to not be academic, because it was never a push to be academic, but the drive to be good at whatever it was we chose to do came from my dad, because my dad came from a very working class family where education wasn't prioritized. It was very much just go into this factory and work there for the rest of your life, and that's what you're going to do. Yeah. So he never got even a basic education. He didn't finish what, I guess, I don't know what in England, in Scotland it's like standard grades, at GCSEs or something here.
Yeah.
So he never, or maybe he got those, but he didn't get anything really above that. He just went and worked in a print factory, and that was it. And they expected him to do that. But for whatever reason, his peers maybe or something, he wanted to do more, achieve more. He started traveling a lot. I think the National Geographic magazines and all this kind, and he realizes a lot more that can be done and seen and achieved. And then he met my mom when they were traveling around the States. They got together and he's like, I want to do something more with my life than this woman I've met. So he went back. He wanted to go to university. But that meant he had to go to college and do all of these night classes. So during the day, he was working in a factory. And my mum couldn't work at that time, so kind of supporting those two. In the evening, he was doing night classes to try and get his basic education so he could apply for university. And then he went to university, got his degree while he had us, actually. I was then born while he was going through university, and then eventually got his master's, blah, 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 blah. All that to say, the way he went around it was quite hard. So the lesson that he instilled in me and my sister was just do good early on, and then your choices are open. Because he never did it early on. So it meant he was doing all of this with a job, with a wife, with kids, and that he had to open those doors. Whereas if you just study really hard when you're younger, all of those doors are open and you can choose whichever door you want. So that whole thing about doing well in school came from my dad, and not being in my mid-20s and having to go back to university or college and just being 18 and then taking a break or doing this or doing that, but basically having as much choice as I wanted. So it didn't ever come from my Asian side. It came from my dad's side, so my British side. So that's the whole story around that. Yeah. It's opening doors. So being good in it, or trying hard in education, is just to open doors. And I think the other thing that they always said to me, whereas one thing my mum said, and it's always stuck with me, is if something's worth doing, do it well. So if you're going to go and do your exams and whatever, do it properly. And the other thing was just try your best. Like if you tried your best and you fail, fine. Your best, maybe you're not that good at maths, and that's fine. Just try your best. And so those are the two things I got from my mum, was if you're going to do it properly. Just try your best if you're going to do it. And my dad was, do it early so that you have more doors open.
Do you think that the gender of the parent could have some impact on this? Where are your
My mum is Shanghainese and my dad's English.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, I can't remember what yours is, Daniela.
My mum's Chinese from Qingdao and my dad's Danish.
So you both have a Chinese
mum. Chinese mum, yeah.
My dad is Chinese. Thai. Thai Chinese. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that's
yeah.
a whole other thing, isn't
that's
it?
That's a whole other thing. Yeah. Like Chinese mums.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
Sasha, edit that out.
Just very, very quickly, though, just go to back to what you said, Sumiko. I think the whole time you were saying that, I was like kind of blanking on you because I felt like you are actually like my high achieving Asian inspiration. Like, I think I became more high achieving since knowing you, which is like levels. And so as you were saying that, I was just like, but because you were talking about not having that kind of influence. And then, but eventually we got there and it's like very, very interesting, like where you actually got that. And it's actually not really from, yeah, it's from your dad who's Scottish, and you're kind of, yeah, majorly disproving one of the hypotheses.
Did you both do a degree as well?
Me, yeah. Sorry. I don't think me not doing a degree, that was never offered.
Yeah.
I would have had to do a degree.
And yeah, same.
Which is why I say my parents never really pushed me to do anything, because I went to one open day and I was going to go to university, and then I decided it wasn't for me.
So what did you do instead?
Did you get a job? I took a year out just working in Sainsbury's and trying to work out what I wanted to do. And then I went to college and just learned about trees. And then I ended up just falling into this job out of that. You don't need a degree to do my job. So it worked out quite well. That's because amazing. It's such a niche thing. There aren't many people with degrees in trees. And if you have a degree, then you would go higher than the position I'm in, basically. So it's like a little sweet spot in the middle, basically.
No. Do you know, that also reminds me is for years I always worked for my mum has a jewellery business. So I literally started working for my mum when I was like six, because she had to put labels on her bracelets and stuff. I think I started selling on the stand like when I was like maybe 9 or 10. And I was a secretary from that age too, because it was from our house. So I'd have to answer the phone and be like, hello, you know, and answer it properly. She like trained me. But then weirdly, when as I got older, I actually wanted a job when I was like 16. And when I was at university, my parents were like, no, please don't get a job. We really want you to focus on your studies.
Yeah, that happened to me.
Right?
I
really?
Was never really allowed to have a job. Like, do your studies, don't divide your attention.
That was it?
Yeah.
Also, no boyfriend. Well, that's a whole other story. But I wasn't allowed a boyfriend until I was 18. So no boyfriend, no distractions. And I remember my dream when I was 16 or maybe 17, I just wanted to work at Benefit, the makeup counter, you know?
The real Woodford girl.
At her, you should have seen me. I was orange. Like, literally, I used to just wear foundations like 5 shades darker than me.
I would just say the one thing you said that you always thought I was think of me as a high achieving Asian. It was quite interesting to me because I've never had a goal. I've never been like, oh, I need to be this thing. I've just kind of gone from what I enjoy and what I love to the next thing that I enjoy and I love. And I think that has fortunately taken me in a direction. I say fortunately, but I also hate the word luck because I see this next thing, which looks interesting. Like, I want to do that. I want to go there. And I want to try that. So I think that high achieving thing, Asian thing, kind of undermines the determination and the effort that a lot of Asians put in to achieving that thing. Mm. Because, oh, you're an overachieving Asian. It's in your genes, or it's just because of your upbringing.
Your culture.
And your culture. And that's why you're really good at it. It's like, no, I work really hard. I see something I want and I go there. I see something else I want and I go there. And I think that for me, I am a bit uncomfortable with, I mean, it's funny and we laugh about it because we're half Asian and we just make fun of each other for it. But the non-Asian perspective of us just being smart and lucky that we can have all of these things and do all of these things undermines effort that a lot of us half Asians actually put into achieving those things.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful point. And I think you are a testament to what one can achieve with their lives just by putting one foot very solidly in front of the other. Because what you said that your mum instilled in you, which is whatever you do, do the best you can. And
that seems to be what you're saying, that you, that's what, without having always had a very, very clear goal and vision, you've just been like, this is what I want to do. And you've just given it all. And that's how you've been able to build up your career and all the amazing skills and hobbies that you are good at. Also, Reese, I think you, so you know so much about plants and trees, and you have this career that you're really interested and passionate about. Like every time you talk about this topic and trees, I feel infected by your passion, and I always learn stuff when we talk about it. And then on the side, you have a record label, you make music, you DJ, you throw parties, and every party that I've gone to, like, I've loved the music that you personally have made, and also like the vibe at the party was really great. I love the music that's on your record label. And so
thank you. I appreciate it.
And so yeah, I don't know, it's, I was gonna flippantly be like, without, you are like, oh, I'm not a high achieving Asian. I'm like, you totally are, as a joke. But like in a weird way, I think you're also like testament just to like following the passion and just doing the thing.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I know what you mean. I always think of like the high achieving thing to be like strictly academic and how much money you earn almost. Like, you know, in the end, that's kind of what it really boils down to, or like how much of a difference in the world you make. Which I guess you can do with art and stuff as well. But I just don't consider myself someone that is high achieving. I never have.
Everyone else does, though. So you good. Can say that. We're good. All thinking of you.
I just don't think I'm very hardworking. I think, as Sumiko said, you have to work hard yourself to be a high achiever and maybe have external pressure as well. But I personally don't consider myself to be that hardworking. I do stuff for fun when I find it interesting.
I think I'm the same, actually. I think it's actually not that it's an expectation, but just it's kind of around you all the time. And I think we never, in an Asian family, you never use that as the term high achiever ever.
I've never heard it in Chinese. Exactly. Literally, I don't know what you would say in Chinese.
It's just like they got, you know, 99% or something, you know, like, I think it's just, that's the kind of the baseline thing. And I don't necessarily always think that's a bad thing, because I think, like you said, you do all these amazing things, but you still don't think you're high achieving. But everything you've just said, I think, wow, you're so high achieving, you know, in my mind.
Get to know me a bit better. I assure you, I can change that.
I think you're just like colossally humble.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't think that's the case, though.
It is.
Well, any high achieving half East Asian potential BFFs out there, please shout out to us. We'd love to hear your high achieving, non-high achieving theories and stories. Email us at info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or DM us on Instagram. That's third magazine, third with three I's. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll shout out our favorite responses on the bonus episode. Okay, thanks, guys. Love that.
Thank you. I felt this episode was another heartwarming one. Jade expressed, I guess, the pressures of navigating being, I believe it was an only child, and the expectations of achieving, even though they didn't feel like they were good at various aspects that was expected, that they were expected to be good at. And I think some of these things are not even just necessarily a cultural expectation, but then a societal expectation, but then also a pressure that you put on yourself. And I think all of those layers came through when they were expressing maybe not feeling good at maths, or maybe not being as accomplished, whatever that means, as their cousins. I really felt that as they expressed that.
Definitely. I think also when you were saying the cousins, I remembered that sort of like familiar comparison that will happen within families, where they're like, you know, your cousins are doing this, so you need to be doing this. Yeah. And how that pressure can be both good and bad, I guess, because to some extent, I guess everyone on the show seems to be smashing it, right? But it just seems like they've all had very different journeys to getting there, you know, whether that's been through parents who have kind of stepped back like Reese's and gone, you do whatever you want to do. Or parents like maybe Daniela's mum, who was helped her be a bit more focused. Or Sumiko's mum, who was like, you know, do your best. So all kind of like very different ways to arrive at the same place, maybe.
I hear you. I guess I would say as well, I picked up from Reese the feeling of not necessarily feeling as accomplished in other people's eyes. So he manages an entire area for the whole of like a borough of London, I believe, including managing tree surgeons and things like that. And to me, that's amazing and contributes greatly. It's very needed. But I guess the pressure that he might feel societal within himself or culturally from maybe his parents or family and things like that. And so there's so many layers that came through in this conversation that I think are playing with each other in how they expressed what they did. Yeah, that's what I picked up on.
I think also what Sumiko was saying is about what you pick up from your parents, because it seemed like she really saw what happened with her dad, and that kind of really fueled her attitude to what she did. So it just goes to show, like, you know, the people who you have around you also influence your outlooks around what success is and what an achievement is too.
I also felt like Sumiko's story, when I say story, it's their story, but plays against the stereotype, I guess. To an extent, maybe we were expecting that pressure or that drive to have come from the parent of Asian heritage. But actually, in this particular case, it was her dad who had, like she said, come from a particular experience and background and had that drive within themselves. So I also then started questioning, okay, how much, and I guess comes back to my point, how much is British culture influencing our drive and our idea of success. Another thing is like how much should, like you said, is the parents' input. So yeah, that was definitely a good example to kind of counteract the stereotype. I also wanted to point out at the same time the movement, the lying flat movement. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. I think it's called Tangping. And it was like, it's kind of like the personal rejection of being overworked. And it was a movement that kind of sprung up in 2021 and has been kind of really circulating around China, South Korea and places like that. And it's also kind of been picked up in the West as well, as who have their own version, like quiet quitting, where it's like, we're not going to do more than is necessary. What we've been like asked to do for our work, we're not going to go above and beyond that. So there are all... I guess the counteraction or backlash to being overworked and to this idea of achieving in other people's eyes as opposed to what we find is our standards. And it's interesting that it's come from Asia and has also been kind of co-opted and adopted in the West, in just in contrast to our conversation that we've just had.
That's super interesting. I never knew anything about that movement, but it makes so much sense. If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, www.thirdmagazine.co.uk, also with free eyes.
And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
All of the music
music you've been hearing on this show is from our guest Reese's record label, Emperor Recordings. If you search them on Instagram, their logo has a dog in it. Follow them and go to their parties.